Hi, everybody. Eve Harrow on Rejuvenation for the Land of Israel Network. It is the waning hours here in Israel of April 18th, 2021, just beginning the seventh day of Sivan, 5781. Beautiful, actually quite hot days here in Israel and enjoying the sunshine. Masks came off today, so lipstick went back on, and you can see everybody's smile, and everybody's running to the dentist now to get their teeth cleaned because they haven't in a year, and all this really fun stuff when you're face isn't covered anymore. But there's really a sense here in Israel like, oh my God, we're semi back to normal. Hopefully it should, please God, just last. But I'm really, really excited and honored to have with me today Judy Battalion, who wrote a book that I couldn't put down. And that's saying something because I read a lot. The Light of Days, The Untold Story of Women Resistance Fighters in Hitler's Ghettos. And before you think to yourself, like, another Holocaust book? Like, how many can there be? It's been so many years. All the stories have come out. Let me tell you that this is a story that has not come out. And Judy is on the New York Times bestsellers list with this book. And that tells you something as well. So Judy, thank you so much for joining me here today on the Land of Israel Network.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So tell us a little bit about, like, how do you find a new story about the Holocaust, new research? It just seems like there's been so much done. And of course, the survivors are passing away every single day. We're losing more and more of the witnesses and the people who actually experienced this horror. So tell us about the book, the idea for the book, how you went about researching it, some of the challenges involved.
All right, big questions to begin with.
We do big questions on Rejuvenation.
So you asked how I find a new story about the Holocaust, and I found that completely by accident. I found this story 14 years ago. I was living in London at the time, and I was exploring my Jewish identity. I was writing about it. I'm the granddaughter of Holocaust survivors.
Okay.
And I was very interested in the idea of what I call the emotional legacy of the Holocaust, how trauma passes through generations. In my own life, I was thinking a lot about danger and how I felt that my Holocaust heritage was sort of shaping how I perceived and reacted to danger. And I wanted to explore this. I was doing a lot of performance at the time. So I decided to write a performance piece about Jewish women who had confronted danger. And the first woman to come to my mind was someone I had studied in fifth grade. Her name was Hannah Senesch.
Right.
And for those who don't know who she is, Hannah Senesch was a Hungarian Jew. She was young, about 20 years old. And she moved to what was then Palestine before World War II.
Mm-hmm.
But during the war, she decided to join the Allied forces, to become a paratrooper, and to go back to Nazi-occupied Europe and fight. And, you know, I studied her as a child. I kind of grew up with her as a hero figure, a
right.
legend. But I guess I was interested at that time less in Hannah Senesch as a legend, more in her as a person. Like, who does that? Who volunteers to go back and fight the Nazis? So, all to say, I went to the British Library because I was looking for like a more nuanced biography on Hannah Senesch. I was like, surely someone had written something exploring her psychology. She was the only woman I'd ever heard of like this.
Mm-hmm. She was also a poet. She wrote beautiful songs, which every Israeli child knows, Eli, Eli, and really beautiful songs. So, right. So there's that. There's definitely that sensitive side to her. You know, that artistic side, right?
So I wanted to understand, who is this person who is a beautiful lyricist and going back and dropping from airplanes fighting Nazis? So I went looking for a good biography of her. But there were not very many books about her in the British Library, I have to say. So I just ordered whatever they had. And when I went to pick up my stack of books, I noticed one of the books was a bit unusual, like as an artifact. It was an old book. It was in a fabric cover with gold lettering, and it was in Yiddish. It was called Frauen in die Ghettos, Women in the Ghettos. But I always say even more unusual than the book is the fact that I speak Yiddish. So
wow.
I start flipping through this book looking for Hannah Senesch, but I can't find her. She's only in the last few pages. In front of her, it's like 150, 170 pages of other young Jewish women who fought the Nazis from the Polish ghettos. That's why it's called Women in the Ghettos. But it was photographs and snippets of bios and stories with titles like Ammunition, Weapons, Partisan Combat. And just in tone and in content, it was so different from any Holocaust narrative that I knew or that I'd grown up with. Even in my family and community that was largely Holocaust survivors. Mm-hmm. So right away, I knew there was something here that intrigued me and that I felt had merit. And that's how it all began.
Wow. Now, let me ask you something, because sure. Many of my friends also were, you know, second generation Holocaust survivors. Some of them grew up in homes where nobody talked about anything. It was like the parents would scream in the middle of the night and the kids knew they were having the nightmare. Others, and it seemed more if it was the grandparents, heard a lot. Like, it seems that there was some opening up of the next generation. The people didn't want to talk to their kids, traumatize their kids so much. But with their grandchildren, that it was a different kind of relationship and I could do that. Is that what happened in your home? Did you hear the stories?
In my own home, yes, that was more similar to my life. And in my book, I met a lot of the survivors and their grandchildren, and I followed how this story works over generations. And yes, mm-hmm. often what my generation, the 3G, the third generation, right. does have a less fraught relationship with the survivor, and also mm-hmm. a sense of pride about our grandparents' history. And right. we also ask about it. We learn it in school. So there is a different dynamic. So I did hear bits of my grandmother's story. It was never like a chronological narrative from A to Z. It was always, a little bit here, a little right. bit there, a bit there. But yeah, she talked about it all the time, my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
She did. Yeah.
She's not living anymore?
No.
She doesn't know about this book. But it seems like she was kind of the inspiration or some kind of spirit behind it that got into you. Yes. Okay. So you look at this book and here you are I have a master's degree in psychology, so I'm fascinated also by trauma and living here in Israel, of course, and a lot of the discussion here in the last week, especially with Holocaust Memorial Day and then with Israel's Memorial Day for wars and for terrorism. There's been a lot of discussion about trauma and how it carries on and how it carries on into the next generation. So where did you go with that particular idea? Because that was the impetus for this book. I mean, initially that was your idea, right?
Right. So that idea, people are asking me all these questions about Hanna Senish. I'm like, I don't know. I didn't end up researching Hanna Senish
right.
because sometimes it went in a different direction. So when I started working on this book, which took me a long time, by the way, and went through many iterations, and it was going to be many different projects before it became this book behind mm-hmm. me. But at first I was really trying to figure out the story, but your question is good, because the last section of my book, the book's in four parts, and the last part is entirely after the war, right. because I continued to be so interested for these women who were resistance fighters and who did survive. What did happen to them? How did their trauma impact the rest of their lives? How did they go on surviving? Did mm-hmm. their experience both of tremendous loss and also of being in an organized underground, did that influence their experience of the war? So I met with many families and I did ask these questions and yes, talk a lot.
Mm-hmm. What I loved about the book is you got as personal as you could with the information that you had, like even a physical description of each woman. And you go really into a lot of women, many of whom, spoiler alert, don't survive the war. It's not like you sat down and just based the book on a lot of the survivors. And of course, that drew me into the book. Like, is she going to make it? Because I became so invested in some of the people that I'm reading about. And these are real women. That one doesn't make it, or it's like, I can't tell how many times I cried during the book because I can't believe it. Here she did these incredible things and she smuggled in and she dressed up. A lot of these women, of course, didn't look Jewish, right? So they were able to fake it and go on. But the extraordinary bravery that you describe, the chutzpah, I don't know if all my listeners know what chutzpah is. It translates as unmitigated gall, but it doesn't mean that in this context. It's like overwhelming bravery to get on a train like full of Nazis, dressed to the teeth, looking beautiful, the last person they would suspect, and do whatever it was they had to do. I mean, how did you find out all this information? Because some of it is like really incredibly detailed to an insane degree, really. I mean, kudos to you for the hard work you put in here. It's so obvious on every page.
Thank you. I did an insane amount of research.
Yeah.
I work primarily from memoirs and personal testimonies. I'm a historian, but I've also written a memoir. So I think both those aspects of my own experience really played out in how I developed this book, because it's all true. It's all historically researched. I spent, you know, years in archives and libraries, but I really worked with testimony. I really tried to stay very close to these women's voices, what we would call a close third person. I tried to foreground their writing, their words, sometimes their spoken testimonies. I really tried to bring that alive on the page. And I also did a lot of research around really the visuals of the time and the fashion of the time, mm-hmm. and trying to really understand, you know, I spent time in Poland. A lot of my time there was just getting on a train and seeing what it looked like. I wanted to take the same train rides these women took and try to understand what they saw, to be in their bodies and in their positions as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and some of them are 15, 16, 17 years old, alone in the world. It's really mind-boggling to think about this. These aren't like 30-year-old women with some kind of maturity. They go from childhood into hell overnight in certain cases.
I write about organized youth resistance, and these women are anywhere from age 16 to maybe 25, 26. Those are the leaders. Those are the older women. So these are young women who are risking their lives in order to do this underground resistance work.
Yeah.
I can tell you more about it. Yeah.
do you think there was some kind of defining personality trait in a lot of these women? Or some of them came from like revenge against the Nazis, like they just watched the whole family be slaughtered. And even if it killed them, which in some cases it did, they were not going to go down without a fight. Or others of them from a place of faith, like how many different, I don't know if there's one defining trait or if there were a few that you pulled out specifically.
So again, I speak about many women in the book, so you know, I can't generalize. Everyone's
right.
A little different,
exactly.
But there are a few things that I think shaped them and their responses to danger. So for one, many of them who I write about had been part of youth movements before the war. Hmm. Most Polish Jewry, the 100,000 Polish Jewish youths were part of youth movements. They actually weren't allowed to join the Polish Scouts. So this was kind of a Jewish response to that. But these movements were not just the Scouts. They were intellectual, emotional, social, and spiritual training grounds for young Jews in Poland. And I write about women coming out of socialist, secular movements. Some were Zionist, some were not. But in these movements, they really were trained to, you know, they were trained in physicality. They were self-sufficiency. They had farms. They did defense classes, physicality, sports, athletics. They were trained in psychology. They were emotional awareness. They had to understand their strengths, their weaknesses. They were trained in a diet of Jewish pride. They learned a lot about Jewish history. They discussed their own legacy. They learned female revolutionaries like Rosa Luxemburg was on the curriculum. They were readers. And they also were socialists. They believed in equality, in collectivism, in collaboration. Many of these women had left their family homes as teenagers to move into kibbutzim, or communes, with their youth movement, which were set up all over Poland. I had no idea about that before doing research for this project. So many of these women, first of all, and the most important thing, they were leaders in these movements even before the war. Women had some of the movements, each group had a man and a woman leader. Many of the women, they were educated. Women in Poland were educated. They had to go up to school up to eighth grade. University was open to women. Many of these women had university degrees or specialist degrees. So these women were leaders. They were educated. They had already worked together and lived together and understood their own. They had a strong dynamic. These were close-knit groups. And they felt very proud of being Jewish and very proud of their heritage. And I think it's their pride, their understanding of collaboration and collective work, their values. They valued truth and justice. And these were political and philosophical groups. So they grew up already valuing the fight for freedom. Mm-hmm. And so these, I think women were really, they were brought up in a context that also enabled this transition to becoming an underground in the war.
It's absolutely fascinating. And, you know, many of them had the opportunity to get out. They were booked on the next boat to Palestine or whatever it is, and they stayed. They made the choice to stay.
Some of them left and came back. They smuggled themselves back, like Hannah Senish, but, you know, I found out much more about this, right? They went back to Nazi-occupied Poland. They became leaders in the Warsaw Ghetto. They had been out already.
Right.
But they felt such a sense of duty and responsibility for the Jewish community.
Mm-hmm. And what comes through in your book is the bonds that they have between them as well. Well, you talk about that collective responsibility. Yeah, very much shows, you know, that it wasn't just about saving themselves. I mean, many of them sacrificed themselves in order to save the group or try and save the group or whatever needed to be done in the ghettos or in other places. I mean, these are just, the stories are really, really outstanding. You know, years ago, I read a book. I think it's called Dove on a Wire. It was translated from Hebrew. And it was a man who survived the war. And he was talking about the trauma of the war and how it changed his personality. But in his case, and it was a very raw and very difficult book to read because he talked about how violent many of the survivors were after the war. Like many of them, you know, went on rampages themselves because to a great degree in the camps, they'd lost their humanity because they had been turned into animals. And it took a while and it was a big struggle to get that back. Do you see that? Did the women react like that? You're talking about women in danger and how they react to danger and how they react to trauma. I would imagine there's a difference here in the gender that women wouldn't necessarily go into violence afterwards, but they would internalize it or behave that differently. Was that something that you saw here or among those who did survive that you spoke to, of course, on how they dealt with the years of unspeakable horror that they lived through?
So that's a good question. First of all, just to make a distinction, most of the women I write about were not in the camps. Mm-hmm. They were doing underground work on the outside. They were in hiding. They were pretending. They were passing. They were in the ghettos, out of the ghettos.
Right.
A couple of them had been in the camps, though, or in other horrific political prisons. You know, I'm working from personal testimony. These women had already died by the time I started really writing this book. So I wasn't interviewing them. I wasn't, you know, probing their psychological lives. I was working from testimonies and memoirs that they had left.
Mm-hmm.
And then conversations with their families. So in general, I can't tell you what was really happening. I don't always know that. But in general, no, I did not hear about violent behavior. It's not something that came up.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly, there was extreme depression. One woman couldn't survive. I said she couldn't survive surviving. And even though she survived, she still killed herself.
Right.
The trauma was so entrenched and so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that with many of the women that I wrote about, for many of them, there was a coping mechanism of really not talking about it. They were, you know, when the war was over, they were in their young 20s, mid 20s, or the oldest, and they had nothing. They had no family, they had no home, they had no nationality, they had missed the time in their lives to train for a career. When one usually trains, they miss the time in their lives when they often get married or fall in love or have kind of normal, what we would consider normal romantic development or social intimacy development. This was all for them so skewed and intensified or skipped over. And for many of them, they all found themselves in new countries alone. I mean, with some of their comrades from the war, but that's it. And they had to start over. They really had to start over. And again, they had their whole lives ahead of them. So what I found more was a repression, a real repression. As you said, I mean, some of their children didn't even know these stories at all.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them wrote their memoirs or wrote testimonies in like 44, 45, and then forgot about it. That was part of their therapy almost. I got it on the page and I had to move on. Others didn't speak about it at all until later in life.
Mm-hmm.
Often prodded by grandchildren, as we were saying before.
Right. And I would imagine that many of them were raped or had to do whatever it was that they had to do to survive, which we know about and are not going to talk about that.
For many reasons. Yeah.
For many, many reasons. And we really know now with a lot of that's come out and some of the openness now and sharing abuse and especially of women, how utterly traumatized they must have been. You talk about not having like boyfriends and the typical teenage and young woman experiences. They had the opposite. You know,
write a bit about the sexual violence and the threat, but again, I'm only writing from what they have offered. So often they are not writing about that in their memoirs. So.
Right. For understandable reasons.
Of course.
Completely understandable. And you've got to make your way through. Did you connect to a particular character? A particular person that you were writing about? Was there like, without giving too much away, but, or that you can, it's fine. It's not like a mystery. Was there like someone that you found yourself thinking, you know, like, what if that had been me? You know, sometimes we'll read, I know I've done that. What if I was in the Holocaust? Like, how would I have reacted? What would I have done? Would I have gone with my children if they took my children away and sent them to the gas chamber and I had a chance to live? But would I have gone with my kids because even if it meant dying, because I wouldn't want to live without them? Like, I mean, these are horrible choices that people were making every second of every day. Was there any point where you like found yourself kind of drawn into a particular person and the situation that she was in? Like maybe as a surprise to you also, because it seems like a lot of what's happening to you here is surprising. Like it, you know, it's, you're looking for one thing and something else comes upon you and you go with that, which is nice.
I mean, this question of what would I have done? I think that was all I thought about every day for 10 years working on this, you know, every situation, could I have done this? Would I have done this? How would I? So, I mean, that's a question I ask myself constantly. Is there someone I relate? It's usually the things that I relate to are less their heroic actions and more when I read about their personalities, their social, one woman, the leader from Kaplitnitska, who was 25 when the war started, she was already a leader in the youth movement. She left Poland but couldn't take it. Weeks later, she smuggled herself back in, became a leader in the Warsaw Ghetto, ran soup kitchens and programs, traveled the country under Nazi rule, going to ghettos, giving lectures and seminars and bringing information and booklets she had printed illegally. She was the first person to smuggle weapons into the Warsaw Ghetto. She put them in a potato sack, two guns under potatoes. She was stationed in this town of Pidgin. She ran an underground. I mean, she was called Die Mamy because the mother in Yiddish. She was such a leader of the people. So that part of her, I don't relate to. I could never be that. I admire is an understatement. She's incredible. She makes me cry every time I talk about her. How did we not know about her for all these years?
Really?
But But what I relate to is when I read all these memories friends had written about her, when they talked about how, you know, she was very introverted. She had trouble keeping up friendships because she was very in her own head. I was like, oh, I'm like that. So the things that I related to were more people's interests. One woman very into poetry, obsessed with poetry, or, you know, the traits and the attributes that I felt were very compelling, because these were people like me and you, you know, and that's what I wanted to bring out, that these weren't, that they're not old timey characters. These were young women who were very much like me when I was a young woman in many ways. And I wanted them to feel relatable and real, because they are. They were.
Look, I think what you have done, you know, there's an expression in Hebrew, chesed shel emet, which is when you do something for somebody and you know you're not going to get thanked. Like, it's hard to describe what chesed means. It's like loving kindness, but it's really more than that. You've done something that there's no way that you're going to get paid back for. And that's exactly what you did, Judy. You brought women that most of us had never heard of. We've all heard of Chana Senesh, right? All of us. But virtually every other person in your book, I had never heard their name before. I had no idea that this entire underground existed, that what these women were doing for years, and they saved so many lives. And they also gave a spirit to the Jews that were fighting back against the Nazis. And something, you know, you could say, well, they lost, right? The Warsaw Ghetto and the other ghettos were eventually destroyed. But there was something bigger than them that they brought in there. And you dug them out of the history bin and you brought them to life. And I think that's why it's on the bestseller list, because nobody else has done that in the last 70 years. And you gave them a voice, even though it's, you know, most of them never had children and don't have anything to continue. And that's what you've done for them, is a real chesed shel emet, is giving them a place in history and in our hearts and in our minds that is priceless. And it's a tremendous thing that you've done, really. I want to thank you. Like, I closed the book feeling that I knew a much more of the history of what had happened there, but I knew these women, you know, and that they were going, and that they're going to affect me also for the, like, I'm far from being a hero, not even close, but maybe there, I can dig sometimes, at some point inside myself, just a little bit harder to accomplish something that I didn't think I could, because if they could, then we have to also. Exactly. And that, I think, is huge, is really, really huge. And you were able to do that and do it in beautiful English and written so well. You could see that it's part history, part memoir, like you infused it with life. You really did. One last question, then I'll let you go. You're a mom. Did writing this book affect you? It affect you in terms of, like, you know, you're being a mother, writing about so many women who went through so much?
First of all, thank you very much for what you were saying before. It's very kind of you and touching. And I really felt a duty to these women. I always say, I feel like Frumka's granddaughter that she never had.
Right.
Because if I can't tell her story, who else is reading documents to tell it? So,
right.
I feel very responsible to her. So thank you for reading and caring. Being a mother made this research very difficult. I mean, you know, I'm reading about horrible things that happened to children in the Holocaust and as you said before, the choices mothers had to make about what to do with their children.
Right.
Some of the women I write about helped rescue young children, mm-hmm. and cared for them both during and after the war. A lot of them were very dedicated to mm-hmm. orphans and to children with whose parents had been alive, and they helped them find solace. But these are, I mean, horrible stories. Again, part of why it took me so long to write this book.
Right.
I had to stop, start too.
Mm-hmm. I could see why, but I think that you've really added, I don't know if there's a genre of Holocaust writings, and genre seems like such a trite word, like historical fiction and murder mystery, but I guess there's a place on the bookshelf, but I think you've really done a magnificent job, and really I recommend to my readers to pick it up, The Light of Days by Judy Battalion. Where is it available?
It is available wherever you can buy books. Okay. And you can find on my website, www.judybattalion.com, many of the sales links and sites. Also, I should say there's a young readers edition. I didn't finish before. This is for ages 10 to 14. And this is the one thing as a mom that I feel that I can give my daughters and son this story and you know, hope that they too, you know, appreciate this.
That's amazing that you did that. Yeah. So if people want to be in touch with you, I assume, I don't know, these days with COVID, people aren't really doing book signings and going out to places and doing book readings. I assume you're Zooming and available online. Can people book you for that and ask you their own questions based on their own community, synagogue, church, you know, whatever it is, parenting group, whatever it is that they need, because you have, we just touched on a few points. You have such a broad range of thoughts on this and different areas of expertise. Can they do that?
Yes, I am doing a Zoom world tour. So all the information is on my website. You can get in touch with me on the contact form. Great. There's also a long list of my Zoom events and, I'm trying to keep it up to date, but yes, you can reach me there.
Fantastic. Okay, good. Anything else, Judy, before we sign off? Anything you'd like to add?
Just thank you for your thoughtful conversation. I really appreciate it.
Well, that's the whole point of this podcast is to something that interests me, I'm going to assume hopefully will interest at least some of my listeners who are magnificent and very interested and love things Jewish and Israel. And I know that this is definitely a topic that draws people back over and over and over again. So thank you so much. Judy Battalion, The Light of Days, The Untold Story of Women Resistance Fighters in Hitler's Ghettos. Definitely an important addition to the knowledge that we have about those horrific years in the 30s and 40s in Europe. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Letting Judy go now. Eve Harrow, thanks to Tabitha and to Ben, as usual, for everything they do to put out the podcast. And I hope you're all well, and if not, getting better, and that the world is moving into brighter days. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network, broadcasting from Israel. Take care, everyone. Goodbye for now.
Join the Land of Israel Network Fellowship. Sign up today and join the revolution, inviting the world to learn Torah from Judea with Jeremy Gimpel and Ari Abramowitz.
We may come up short on becoming the person we want to be, but that's not the point. Happiness is progress. Wandering aimlessly through a meaningless life is a recipe for suffering. What could be worse than walking around the desert for absolutely nothing? But as long as we are walking toward the land of Israel, every step has purpose.
For more information, visit thelandofisrael.com/fellowship.